Hello and welcome to the new Golden Trail World Series podcast.
We're lucky to do what we do, but I don't think that it should come with an idea that we are somewhat better because of the fact that we're lucky enough to be able to run in places and sometimes get paid for it. That in itself is a very lucky thing to be able to do. It's important, I think, always keep that in mind.
Hi, I'm Marc-Marie Fury, your host for the 2022 Golden Trail Series podcast, and you're joining me today for this Tour de Fjord pre-race episode. So you've been listening to the previous episodes of the podcast, I'm sure, so you'll know what the Golden Trail World Series is. It's an international trail running series launched in 2018, and it has six iconic races, all less than 42 kilometers long, and the Tour de Fjord race is the third stage of the series. And the next stages of the season will be as follow. Cerdinal, just the weekend after, 31 kilometers in Valais, Switzerland on August 13th. Pikes Peak Ascent in Manitou Springs, Colorado on September 17th. And Flagstaff Sky Peaks in Flagstaff, Arizona on September 25th. This year, the series final will be inviting the top 30 male and female runners, and they'll be chasing $300K as a prize money overall, which is insane. And the race is going to be a bit different. The format is 5 days stage race in Madeira from October 26th to the 31st. And for each of the six stages of the series, as well as for the final, we will record 2 episodes. So again, if you've been following, you know, if you don't, listen up. In pre-race episode, the pre-race episode is important. We're talking about facts. We set the scene. We discuss race details, athletes insight, and essentially what to look for in the live video coverage on race day. And that's actually what we're doing right now in this episode for this Tour de Fjord race. And there's a post-race episode where we analyze the race highlight. We dive back straight into the race experience together with our guests, which are the male and female winners, as well as sometimes other people who join in. And this is also the opportunity for us to answer your questions if you've been asking some of them on social media. So without further ado, let's get into it. Tour de Fjord in Norway. All right. As I'm talking to you, I am actually physically in Stranda in Norway, where the ground is either rocky or muddy, often steep and mostly technical. It's been crazy. We've been out on the course. I have run the whole course just to check it out and understand actually how it will play out and try to also give you as much intel as possible, whether you're racing or not, if you haven't had the chance to check out the whole course. So, at the minute, in mainland Europe, like France and Italy and Spain, there's this like massive streak of heat waves going on. And however, here, it's raining, it's way colder, and it looks as though the race conditions for Saturday, race day, will be wet and cold. It sounds as though it will be potentially close to freezing temperature up on the highest point of the race. So for that reason, and you know, it's only 25 kilometers and 1,700 meters of climb, and I think just as much in descent because it's a point-to-point loop. It's almost a loop, but actually there's a slight difference in locations from the start and the finish. But there is a long list of mandatory kit, and now I understand why, because when we were up there earlier this morning, it's insane. The wind's blowing, it's all wet and super slippery, so you definitely want your gloves, something to cover your head. We all had our waterproof jackets. So, yeah, if you're looking online on the website, it's like, wow, this is just a very short race and there's a lot of mandatory gear. It does make sense. So then this is the first time that Tour de Fjord is part of the Golden Trail World Series. And I mean, you guys are in for a treat, whoever it is, whether you'll be following the race live or those who will be have the chance to actually experience it and run it. Okay, as per usual, we also go into the top men, top women who we can expect to be leading the course either early on, in the middle, or crossing the finish line. And let's see right away, start with the female of the 2022 edition of the Tour de Fjord. All right, we have Sarah Alonso, Caitlin Fielder, who will be our guest for this podcast, Patricia Pineda, Blondine Lirondelle, Joanna Armstrong, Karina Corsolio, Julie Roux, Eleanor Davis, Elise Ponce, and Emily Forsberg. So these are kind of the top 10 where we can definitely expect to see them in the front. So let's dive a little deeper in with some of these ladies. And I also want to start, like, after a very solid start of the season, she won the Mont Blanc Marathon. Sarah Alonso is taking some time off, actually. She was traveling down under, and she had a bit of a reset, which is very, very good. She's back, refreshed, and ready to have a solid go at another win and try to maintain her lead overall, because she is right now first in the overall standings. Now we've got a hungry Kiwi. I was telling you about her, Caitlin Fielder, and she's ready to rock that race. She lives in Andorra, and when she's on the European side, and which means she's very familiar with technical steep ups and downs. So I definitely expect her to have fun and do well along the way. Also, someone to look for, Blondine Lirondelle from France, running for the team Evadict. This is her first participation in the 2022 Country World Series. She's been part of the World Series before. And we definitely know that, I mean, as a 2019 trail world champion and seeing what she's done lately, she has a massive engine. But question mark is, was she able to keep up on the technical parts, which there's a lot of on this course. And talking about technical, we can actually expect Karina Corsolio to be one of the fastest one over the technical parts. And again, I will not stress this enough. This course is gnarly. Now, this is about what I've got in store. I know there's many more women we should talk about. I haven't had the chance. You know, Julie Roux also very strong on technical. Obviously, Iris Pesce as well. Elise Ponce from the mountain running world. So we can expect to see her early on in the race. More about that a bit later. Okay, that's all I got for you in store in the women's field. You can place your bet, but first you do need to know a little bit more about a relatively newcomer in the scene that I had a pleasure to talk to her. Ladies and gentlemen, coming from New Zealand, the one and only Caitlin Fielder. Today, I'm delighted to be with Caitlin Fielder. Hey, Caitlin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I'd like actually to get started because I didn't have the chance. We didn't have the chance to actually have a proper catch up after Mont Blanc Marathon. And you ran pretty damn well there.
Yeah.
Because you've been progressing significantly since like the beginning of last season. And this is exciting to watch. And I was just wondering, with this kind of breakthrough, wouldn't say breakthrough, but like definitely the biggest result in your career so far. Have you changed anything in your approach, whether it's physical, mental, recovery, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone was probably quite surprised when I got second, and I was as well, but I kind of knew I had a bit of a plan that I wanted to stick to, which was different to my plans when I usually race a lot of the Golden Trail and other races. And that was just to kind of go out and just give it my all from the start, really, whereas usually with races I kind of come in more into myself in the second half. But with these races, the level is so high that it's just too late. So I kind of started the race knowing that that's how I wanted to finish, feeling satisfied. And whether I was, you know, won it, came second, podiumed, or bonked halfway, at least, you know, it was a race in which I'd tried something different. So I was obviously really happy with that result. Like, I was very satisfied with how I raced it, and I felt really good pretty much the whole way through. So, but in terms of leading into the race, I hadn't really done anything too differently, but I do think that probably I have more progression to do because I've come into the sport so much later than a lot of the other people. So the increments of, I guess, progression that you see with people that have been in the sport a long time are potentially a lot smaller than someone else like myself. I came into the series and racing at this level last year. And so it's really in the year before that I didn't run at all because of a hip operation. So it's been pretty new and fresh, and yeah, it's satisfying to see the progression, and it's just from hard work, really.
and a bit of Jono's magic.
Of course. Yeah, my coach is the same as Ruth, as you know. So Jono is, and I have a lot of trust in Jono as well, which is really important.
Yeah. And if there's one thing that he knows and he definitely emphasizes is consistency, and he doesn't rush into things, and he just like say, yeah. And as you say, incrementally just gets you stronger and stronger. So it's exciting. It means like that second place was only the kickstart of something greater, something bigger. And so where do we see that transition into? Like, is that going to be next race? Is it going to be by the end of the season? Is it going to be next year?
Yeah. I'm doing the next race in Norway of the Golden Trail series, which will be quite an interesting race for me, I think. It's more of a sky running race, probably. 2,000 meters of climbing and 25K is pretty serious stuff for me. But I'll give it a decent nudge, and then I'll be doing my first 100K at CCC at UTMB. So it's quite cool going into that because I haven't done 100K before.
You're just actually back from kind of a mission. So what happened today for you?
So today I had like a long run planned, which was 6 hours. Distance is kind of a little bit irrelevant up here. Well, full stop, but up here in Andorra, you don't really go very far for how long you're out, which is bit hard to wrap your head around, but I was about an hour and a half in and probably around 2,500 meters high up in the mountains, and then I looked up and saw it just basically went black. it was like an eclipse just came over, and I was like, I checked the weather and this was not supposed to be like this. Like, it says thunderstorms every day and stuff, but it hasn't happened for the last like 3 weeks. So I was like, sure, today will be fine. No way, absolutely not. These hailstones that were coming down, thunder and lightning, and I was probably about 6K from my house at this time, and I was ready to hit the eject and flip it back. but I was like, whenever I do these long runs or any time in these mountains, actually, like I have a warm long sleeve, proper waterproof jacket, a beanie, gloves. I had a change of socks, like an emergency blanket. So I'm ready for it because I just don't want to be like anybody else's issue or, you know, a hazard to myself kind of thing if something does happen. So, and I could keep running, and I kept running, and it was just an incredibly long day. I was waiting for like 40 minutes for these hailstones or something to like pass, and I was just waiting under a tree. But it was fine, and I kept doing the run, so it was just a very long day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, few things here that I'm like realizing. I think we've cracked the code on why Caitlin Fielder is always running with a backpack. Yeah. It seems as though like this is what you train with. This is your comfort zone, no matter what.
I know it is.
And well, guess what? It's going to come to your advantage, actually, because I checked that, and for Stranda, there's a boatload of stuff you need to carry with you.
Yeah.
So you'll be just like, hey, that's just like home.
Exactly. Like I'm ready for extra weight. You know, snacks, picnics, big old sandwich in there.
Yeah, I know. So that will be exciting. And then again, you said like, yes, Stranda is a very like kind of on the short side of all the races in the Golden Trail World Series, but with a serious amount of elevation. But I've heard about this expression called like Andorra flat, and there's nothing flat around you where you live. It's just up, down, up, down. So again, like, I think this will suit you more than what you make it sound like. So obviously you're doing long training and this is more suited towards your goal at the end of August at CCC, but I don't know. I got the feeling you could work out pretty well for you.
Yeah. I hope so. Obviously, I mean, you go into a race to try to win it. You know, I'm not trying to come in and finish seventh, so I'll still be trying for it. Definitely. And I do feel like my weakness when I did start running in these races was the hills, and I feel like I've definitely worked on that a whole lot, and I feel a whole lot stronger on the climbs and stuff now. Still a lot of room for improvement, but yeah, I'm really, so far it's going really well. A lot of gym stuff, so which I enjoy, to get those quads going.
You know, it's good. You said you're new to the sport, like you're pretty fresh into that scene, and you're definitely bringing a refreshing attitude along. Whoever looks at your Instagram can pick up quite some funny situations. You know, there's some stuff people try, you have this like terrible Instagram stride, but there's shit you can't fake. And I love how genuine all your stuff is just happening. And it's like, oh, well, that was a ball. I'm going to share it with y'all.
I think a lot of people it happens to a lot of people. And I just like, I find it so funny that I just need to like let the world know.
Yeah. And this is definitely, like I said, like pretty refreshing and to like not really take yourself seriously. We're all in it for the fun. And as much as some of you are professional runners, like by no means it should imply being serious and I don't know, like being, oh, I'm a runner. And that's actually a big problem for a lot of athletes where they just kind of turn into this mindset of all they are is actually a runner. And the problem is like all of a sudden if there's injury or like a bad performance, their identity falls apart. So that's a bit tricky. But if I feel like, you know, we're pretty safe with you and like I keep my fingers crossed that you'll remain one of the genuine goofballs in the industry.
Keeping it
fresh and keeping it fun.
Yeah, if I can, I guess, make a few people laugh and stuff. I don't know. Like, obviously, I still want to become a better runner than I am at the moment, which is obviously my goal and stuff. But I think there doesn't need to be an inflated self of, you know, idea of self-worth with that as well, because as much as I put in a lot into running and I train a lot to be as good as I can be, at the end of the day, we're just running. You know, like I'm not a nurse. I'm not, you know, helping with the global warming crisis. I'm not in Ukraine right now. Like, we're lucky to do what we do, but I don't think that it should come with an idea that we are somewhat better, like, because of the fact that we're lucky enough to be able to run in places and sometimes get paid for it and stuff. Like, that in itself is a very lucky thing to be able to do. So it's important, I think, always keep that in mind.
It's great piece of advice there. And where do you think this is coming from? Because I feel like this is a very Kiwi thing, like having had the opportunity to go back and forth to New Zealand for like 4 years now. I feel like a lot of people down there are just like humble and very grounded and well aware of, if they're lucky, of that luck and grateful for it. Do you think you can relate to that, or is this something else?
No, definitely. I think in New Zealand, we're always brought up, we have this thing called tall poppy syndrome, and you never want to be like the tall poppy kind of thing. So sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes maybe it's not as good, but a little bit of confidence is good. But I think there's a line between confidence and cockiness and inflating your own self-worth, I think. And so it's good to know realistically where you are, but don't let that get away from you kind of thing. And I think it is a typical Kiwi thing as well. I mean, I can see a lot of it in Ruth as well. She's almost like comes across as mildly embarrassed, you know, when she has these incredible performances and stuff and people are so proud of her, but she's just so humble in her achievements. And I think it's humbleness is something that a lot of people could probably take it on board.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people in this industry who could use a little bit of deflating, but we won't give out names. We're not here to judge. We are not here to judge at all. And so you've been in this sport, you've done, obviously the Golden Trail World Series, you've done long ish stuff. What's the longest you've run? You haven't run 100K yet. You haven't had the chance to do that yet.
The longest run that I've done was the Old Ghost Road, actually the 85K race, which is on the west coast of New Zealand.
Beautiful run.
That was the first ultra marathon I ever did. So I hadn't run. I came straight from like a boxing I was very focused on boxing for around 3 years through university, and then my first few years of work, and then I had a boxing fight, and it's a lot of training. It's pretty serious, and I kind of needed a break from it after I stopped. And so a friend had entered into the first year of the old Ghost Road race, which is 85Ks, and I just decided, yep, let's do it. It took me a long time. But yeah, it was awesome. So that probably started everything off as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is indeed a beautiful course, that one. But like, hell, I almost missed that part of your career, boxing.
Yeah.
How did that came on along?
I think during university, I wanted to do something that wouldn't take a whole lot of time, but would make me fit, basically, and it made me very fit. Like, but you also just feel strong, which is something that honestly I feel like a whole lot of females tend to lean away from. But like, I was, and I still am, to be honest, like, confident, and back then I was a whole lot stronger, obviously. But like, it was like nice to feel strong, you know, in this kind of sense. And everybody now is like lean, you know, skinny, and I was like, you know, well, now even still, be strong, you know, make sure that your muscles and your bones are, can like hold weight, and it's satisfying. It was cool.
Yeah, and I totally get that, like, that about the strong, and not only like feeling strong like in your body, but then it adds to your like mental confidence as well. So now back on to Strandafjord. So 25K, I think it's a little bit less than 2,000 meters. I think it's like 1,700s. I don't want to take anything away. It still looks daunting. And apparently the course is very runnable for the first like 3Ks, very runnable for the last 2Ks, and actually quite technical. There's scree slopes, slabs, ridges, and then eventually back down to close the loop. It's a loop course. You said you had a different mindset approaching Mont Blanc Marathon, and you were going like not all out, but very strong right from the beginning, showing confidence in yourself and your abilities and your fitness. And then, I don't know, this is something new. That was something new to me that I've discovered recently. I've been introduced to that by somebody dear to me, and something that is called like outcome independent. And basically you're racing for what it is. You're in the moment, and no matter what happens in the end, whether you win the race or you finish dead last, it won't affect at all like the pleasure, the satisfaction, the feeling of accomplishment and achievement that you will experience crossing the finish line. Have you gotten close to that attitude or like way of racing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously it's easy for me to say that I would have felt that way when I came second in Mont Blanc Marathon, so it's easy for me to look back on it and say I would have felt the same. But honestly, I mean, potentially there would have been maybe some disappointment if I, you know, wasn't as good as I had hoped, but that just comes along with it. I think that's the cool thing about running, is that it's literally just as much as you can do on the day. And I feel like if you're always chasing, you know, the first spot or the podium, it's such a serious field now and so competitive that you would just be putting all this pressure on yourself to potentially be coming away disappointed all the time. And I feel like if that's what you're searching for, it's happiness that's kind of flittering almost, like it won't always be there, I think.
It is essentially a call for disappointment, and I experience that a lot in mental coaching. When people say like, oh, I'd like to be top five or top 10 or hit the podium, I'm like, and how are you going to control other people?
Exactly.
You can't.
No.
You can't. And I feel like too many people still focus on that, the ranking, but all you can do is give your best on the day.
Yeah. Honestly, what I focus on is timing. Like, I mean, I can't control what anybody else is doing on the course. All I can control is like my effort and my attitude on the day. So
yeah,
and that's that. Honestly, I feel like the shorter races, I just like, I mean, I say it's shorter, but it will probably still be quite, it'll probably still be around 3 hours or something, you know, 2.5, 3 hours, probably more towards the 3 hour mark. So I'd like to say that I'd just go out and try and hang on from the start, but I do tend to get like overexcited with the shorter races. Like I remember Skyrune, I went out really hard in the first like 3K, and then my ticker, my heart just couldn't take it. I was like, oh boy, we're going backwards. We're reversing here, but who knows? I have a plan and then sometimes I stick to it and then sometimes I just throw it out the window.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because essentially it's going first, like there's a contest for the first K, who's the fastest. So the whole field gets completely blasted by people who will like completely walk after the first K. And then that was your experience. You had a plan for a short race and you experienced something very different. But it's experience in the bag, and probably for this race, you will do it differently. It doesn't mean you have to stop not using that strategy.
No, exactly. You're right.
And again, like, I don't know, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be targeting that fastest first K. 1K sprint.
Make it the last K.
That's a better idea. Okay, yeah, I'll stick to that one.
I got zero expertise, and if it fails, yes, you can blame it on me. I'll take that. I think we've covered a lot of topics, and I'm pretty happy with how it went. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Caitlin Field of Fine Art. Follow that Instagram.
Well, what is it?
Okay. It's actually my business that I run. So this is me pinging my business. I am an artist.
There we go. We want every part of you.
Perfect. Well, here we go. This is a massive part of my life as well. Basically, I train and then I come back and I work. So my business is customizing, at the moment, it's customizing cycling shoes, but I also customize running shoes as well and do artwork. So I was lucky enough to have some of the main hitters in the Tour de France this year wearing my shoes, which was amazing for me, amazing for my business. I had them on Wout Van Aert and Tadej Pogačar, which was awesome. And George, of course, my boyfriend, he was wearing them too before COVID struck him down and he was out of the Tour, which was devastating. But yeah, so my business is
so
art. Follow along.
You're customizing, like, in which way? Like, you're adding special laces, you're adding like an outsole, or?
This is good. I need to work on my business. I'm preaching my business. So mainly I hand paint the shoes. So it's literally like your shoe is the canvas,
mm-hmm.
and I do whatever you want on the canvas, basically. So I usually hand paint them, but I also can add detailing with like an airbrush and fades. Usually I'll do like a Photoshop mock-up I always do a mock-up before I paint on the physical shoes themselves, so you can see what they'll look like. And they will look exactly the same as the mock-up. And then I send them back to you and you've got art on your feet.
Beautiful. Do you like, can you tell us about like examples of things you've done?
Oh, I have done over 500 pairs of customized shoes now. So there, I've pretty much done anything and everything you can think of. I've done shoes based off of landscapes, shoes with faces, shoes with dogs, shoes with a lot of Māori art, which is the art, indigenous art from New Zealand. Right now I'm painting shoes with like a splash, a 3D paint splash on them. So it looks like it's been flicked with paint, basically, but it's me painting on all the 3D stuff, tie-dye, geometric stuff, a lot, yeah.
All right, cool. And you said some of their riders in the Tour de France are wearing it. Do you have any female riders?
I do have female riders, not in the I have painted female rider shoes, yeah, but none of them are wearing them in the Tour de France, the Femmes, right now.
Here we go. That's a shout out to all the women doing the Tour de France and, of course, listening to the Gold Trip World Series podcast. Get your shoes customized by Caitlin Fielder. And so the handle on Instagram is?
Caitlin Fielder _fineart.
Fine art. Right. Well, we'll put it in the show notes just to make sure everybody gets it right. And yes, thank you for mentioning that. That's indeed a big part of your life, and it was definitely worth mentioning. So if you have cycling shoes, but you said running shoes as well, what references do you have for running shoes?
Courtney DeWalter. I was lucky enough to basically pin her down.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, she has very happy feet when she's wearing my shoes. So, I mean, this is it. I pinned her down and I painted some tie-dyes on her shoes.
Of course. Like, it was going to be either that or unicorns, candies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that also works. That also works with running shoes. So if there is some runners out there wanting to have their shoes customized, that's also where it's at. All right. Well, thanks for mentioning that. And thanks again for being with us. Thanks for being who you are. Pretty simple, fresh, and you being part of the sport and making it as fun as it is.
Thank you. I appreciate being part of the sport for as long as the sport will take me.
What a cracker and hell of an athlete too. So now let's get on to the men, because there's also a solid group of athletes who showed up and they mean business. Let's start with John Alban, Davide Manini, Manuel Merias, Bartolomeo Preterisky, Elouzin Elazaoui, Frédéric Tranchant, Thibaut Baronian, Anders Kreikvik, Adrien Michaud, and Andy Walker coming from the US. And if you've been following the series, this is his first race of the 2022 series. However, he's been part of the series many times before. Let's dive a little deeper again with the man, Davide Manini from Team Salomon. He's currently leading the series, but we've discussed with him in a previous episode, and he won't be able to run the final, and therefore no chance to be up high in the final ranking. So this means that he's got nothing to lose, and he might very well blow out the field right from the get-go, which essentially is mostly uphill for the first part. And then we'll see how he can go. This is something that I could potentially foresee. Now, our all-time first out-of-the-gate favorite, Andy Walker, he's back to the Golden Trail World Series circuit, and he knows that he's got to play his cards on this first, let's say, third of the race, because this is where he's going to be able to put his powerful mountain running legs to action and hopefully make a little bit of a gap, because then it gets really technical. We were up there. He was with us this morning. And he realized how technical that was. So he said, I got to play my cards early in a race. And that's what he knows as well. Like, we all remember him pulling away in the Mont Blanc Marathon like a couple of years ago and doing extremely well and only get caught back after 30K. Well, guess what? This weekend, the race is only 25K. So that might play out right. Definitely expect to see him ahead of the field with whoever might be able to keep up, because he might not be on his own. And again, that could be Davide Manini. It could also be someone else. And also certainly capable of winning the race, the most local UK citizen in Norway, John Alban. He lives and breathes this kind of terrain. He trains on it. He knows about it. And it will be most likely raining on race day, so he'll be like a fish in a pond. Again, to my knowledge, this is also one of the best technical runner of the circuit. So he showed that he could run fast at Mont Blanc Marathon, taking the win. But we'll see, and you will see in the live coverage, that he can run on technical. All right, and again, I go into details with some of the athletes, but again, Frédéric Tranchant, who is an orienteering athlete, if you don't know that, and so he will be very comfortable in all the bug and the technical parts as well, so he could definitely do extremely well there. Thibaut Baronian, all-time strong, will probably come back a little bit in the second part. Anders Kreikvik, like, he's been second here, he knows the course, he's trained. There's so much potential. Obviously, Bart is here, and whenever he races, he's absolutely ready to tear everything apart. Elouzine El Azawi, he's shown he was twice fourth in the previous races, so he's strong. There's a lot of people who have the potential to take that win, so that will make their live coverage even more exciting. But now I want to talk to you about the course, because hold on to your tits. That is one hell of a ride. Like, again, I've been running the whole course this morning, and it really won't be a walk in the park for all the participants, which, again, is going to be way more interesting. You know, we had very dry, very runnable first two stages, so it's time for technical runners to shine. Now, to walk you through the course, the participants will start with a 3K on a dirt road uphill. And even though the gradient is actually quite steep, this will definitely be fast, and it's still runnable for these elite athletes. So then it branches into a single track, which still climbs for another 5Ks, and then like a little bit of a climb and then a down, and the runners will still be able to run fast. So there I expect Andy Walker, like I was telling you, Davide Marini, John Albon to be in the lead, potentially Elouzine El Azawi as well, and Bart, not too far behind, if not with that lead group. And in the women's field, Sarah Alonso, Eleanor Davis, and another mountain running specialist, Elise Ponce, will most likely be leading the race for this first section. And then this is when things get totally nuts. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is an understatement. This section is absolutely lethal. And I'm telling you from a position of experience on technical terrain. I've done Matterhorn All Tracks, I've done Kima, I've done Glen Coscallen, I've done ILS 2000 Los Sins, and those are seen as the most technical races in the world. Well, that's almost next level up for one single reason. It's wet. And wet rocks on ridges is, like I said, lethal. So the next section is a steep uphill boulder field where running will most likely be impossible and using hand almost mandatory. But if it wasn't enough, the race directors like have them go up that kind of side of the mountain loaded with boulders. And then they come onto a ridge, which is not airy. Like there's no chance to fall unless you really want to, but that's, I hope, not your purpose for the race, and up and out and back to the highest point of the race. And so what you need to picture once they turn around, because going up is always all right, but then going down, it's like you need to picture a mountain side covered with cat-sized boulders, and some are moving, some are not, and all of them are extremely slippery. There's kind of a small layer of moss. And nothing, we've tried, we're a bunch of us with different shoe models, nothing stuck. So essentially, it won't be down to the technical skills, but literally to who has packed the biggest set of balls. Because at this game, I believe John Albon will stay in the lead and will increase potentially his lead even more going up and then down. However, on this terrain, I believe Bart should be able to keep up. And if he's not too far back, Fred Tranchant on technical will also have something strong to play in this section. He might also be a little further back, but personally, I expect Zayd Al-Malek to be one of the fastest runner on that technical terrain, like from the summit and all the way down 4 kilometers, essentially out of this massive boulder field. So this is the top summit again, where there's out and back, and then they kind of go down the boulder field to a saddle, back up another summit, which is then still technical, but less, not as crazy as the first one. And it drops down to make a 4K section, which is pretty ridiculous. But the women's field as well needs to be looked into. And I believe at this game, Karina Korsolio, Emily Forsberg, and Julie Roux will score the fastest splits on that section. Well, and that is. If nothing happens. And next is a pretty long flat section across like a deep bug where there's like, I believe our entering runner, Fred Tranchant, could really do some damage here. John and Bart also most likely will be strong on that section, but more like powering through that field, while I can picture Fred just flying effortlessly over that and make some ground there. But it's going to be hard to see like who can actually pull away. And there's barely a trail, and every other step you kind of sink in either into the moss, into the water, or into some thick mud. And it's way above ankle deep. So that's quite sketch. In the women's, Sarah and Julie might be able to open up a little bit of a gap. But again, the name of the game, I believe, for this section is really not leaving out too much energy so they can actually give everything they have for the next section. In the next section, it will still be wet, muddy, and slippery, yet much closer to what we're used to on normal trails, like a good year in Zegama, a muddy year in Zegama. So should you want to push, it is now possible. You'll still need to have the skills, you'll still need to have the engine, but there, I believe you can start pushing pretty hard. And at this game, Bart and John might really have a go at each other, depending on where they are. I see potentially Eluzin still, if he doesn't get dropped. Fred, I could really picture him in the top three at this point. And potentially, with this guy. But if you're going hard on this section, you're opening the door to making a mistake. And again, that could cost some. In that last part again, let's talk about all the runners. I really see Thibaut Baronion potentially and Anders Kregvik be able to reel people in. They usually race from the back, and I can feel like they could be making their move around this area. And in the women's field, I can totally see Emily Forsberg still be in the lead pack with Julie Roux and Sarah Alonso. Now, this is where things will get tough, is for the last 2 kilometers, because it is on a dirt road first and then on a proper road, and it's all downhill into the finish. And because it's 25 kilometers, I do believe that some athletes, either in the men's or the women's or both, will be very, very close together. And we could potentially expect a sprint finish. And on that kind of super flat, super runnable dirt road, dirt road first and road, it will be extremely painful to sprint. So personally, I'll be delighted, because that is going to make the race even more exciting for me to comment and for you to follow. But I'd say with this amount of information, you're now up to speed with both the athletes, men and women, who will be there competing on Saturday, as well as up to speed with that crazy course that we'll be covering live on Saturday. Strandafjord will indeed be covered live on Saturday in English by yours truly, and I'll be commenting together with local athlete Hans Christian Smetsrud, and this is where you can watch it: on Facebook, on the Gold Trail World Series page, on YouTube, on the Gold Trail World Series official channel, directly on the Gold Trail World Series website, goldtrailseries.com. And if you want additional updates straight from the field, make sure you follow the Gold Trail World Series Instagram account at Golden Trail Series. There's a lot of stories. You can get a feel for how the terrain is going to be. And remember, there's a pre-race podcast, this one, but there's the post-race podcast for Strandafjord that will come out early next week with all the action and reaction from Norway. Thank you so much for joining me today on this third episode of the Gold Trail World Series podcast. And if you've enjoyed this episode, you can like, subscribe, and leave up to a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast, and tell your friends about it. And you can also leave us a comment on social media if you have specific requests or topic you'd like to see discussed this season. We can do it, so let us know. And as always, I'm your host, Martin Gaffury, and until next time, see ya!